Okay, I am the cleanup here in the session with the ever shrinking time slot, and have the unenviable situation. I'm right before the wine and cheese, so hopefully I won't give you too much cheese here, but I do thank the organizers for giving me an opportunity to at least make a few remarks on identifying supernova progenitors. Models are really good. I love them. But I'm rather simple-minded, and for me, it's just much easier to try to go out and actually identify the supernova progenitor directly, if you can, if possible. And so, let's see, got a pointer here? Yeah. And so we did this recently with the Type 2 Plateau Supernova 2003 GD in M74. And so this is a pre-supernova with PIC2 image from HST. Now you really have to use something with high spatial resolution like HST to do this. And this was the circle that represented the optical position of the supernova as measured from a ground-based image. And we identified a star here, star A, which we consider the most consistent with being the progenitor of the supernova. And so we published this paper. And the mass was this 8 to 9 solar mass range for the progenitor mass. Turned out then Smart and his collaborators came along and got an ACS image showing that indeed star A was the progenitor, because the late time image of the supernova coincided with that. And I remember giving this talk in 2003, and Hans Thomas looked very uncomfortable with this 8 to 9 solar mass progenitor. And in fact, I know this causes Stan Woosley still a little bit of the heebie-jeebies. And so you might think that we were a little bonkers, but then last year was 2005 CS in M51, and using the beautiful director's discretionary ACS mosaic of M51, we were able to, in the I-band image, identify this little star and one of the Mickey Mouse ears here. And again, we were able to put it based on upper limits in the other bands on a color magnitude diagram and through a bunch of evolutionary tracks on here, and again got about an 8 solar mass star. Now these are going to be the stars that are going to give rise to most core collapse supernovae, just by IMF arguments, and probably most supernova remnants. Okay, and then these numbers, these low numbers, seem to be consistent with upper limits for other Type 2 Plateau supernovae. We're beginning to see a picture that the mass range for these objects is sort of the lower mass range that follows or allows for core collapse up to some middle level, like about 10 or 15, maybe 15 solar masses or so. There's one more direct identification, 2004A. This paper was submitted to MNRAS. I passed on refereeing it, so I don't know what their conclusions were yet, but it's coming out soon. And they may have some similar mass for this progenitor. Okay, now we'll move on to some of the exotica. Okay, so the progenitors of all the other core collapse supernovae, as far as we can infer. There are a small number of type 2 supernovae that are so-called type 2 linear, and we have not yet been able to directly identify a type 2 linear progenitor. But what we did with the type 2 linear 79C, which we've heard about this afternoon, was basically argue that it's part of this little cluster. This is, again, an HST with PIC2 image. And if you put the photometry of these stars on a color magnitude diagram, throw down some isochrones, and basically say that this represented the most massive star that was in the cluster at that time when it blew up, then that implies that its mass was somewhere on the order of 17 to 18 plus or minus some odd for its initial mass. Okay, and then I can say that using those same data, we hope to maybe isolate the progenitor of 2006X, which went off last night, or was discovered last night. But we still don't have any idea what type it is. So I just put a little circle there, similar to Stefan showing its position on the HST image. I don't see anything in that circle, little bumps and wiggles, but no star, nothing as clear-cut as those stars that you see in the 79C cluster. There are another group of supernovae, which are the type 2Bs. 93J is a good example, started off life as a type 2, and then evolved in later times to look more like a 1B. And what we did in this case was take the late-time HST data of 93J, multiband data. We took the supernova out of those images, and then we added a fake progenitor star, convolved it to sort of ground-based resolution, because the progenitor for 93J was actually identified from the ground in ground-based images, and then figured out how bright and what color that supernova had to have been, that progenitor had to have been, in order to be what was seen from the ground. And again, we infer that in this case, for the type 2B 93J, that its progenitor was not an M-type supergiant like you would commonly expect for the type 2 plateaus and that we're finding now, but possibly a more yellow type K-type star, but of significantly higher mass. And then, you know, so this was really a large range. You know, we were really kind of guessing, but we were fortunate to for the what nominally is the type 2 plateau 2004 ET to actually identify in ground-based and high-resolution ground-based data a progenitor candidate. And when we threw that down on a color magnitude diagram, it also appeared to be sort of a yellowish supergiant in color and have a mass on the order of 15 plus or minus solar masses. Now, it's nominally a type 2 plateau, but in the radio and in optical polarization, it looks more like 93J. And so possibly this has been a misidentified object, maybe more like a 2P. Okay, now to move quickly to the objects that are more like what we've been discussing in terms of GRB is the type 1BC supernovae. To date, no 1BC progenitor has been identified in HST or any other data directly, but we've been able to infer. So here was an image of 2000 EW taken at late times. This is just serendipitously by HST. And here's a similar serendipitous image of the host galaxy before the supernova. And you can see progenitor couldn't be identified. Very similarly for 2003 JG, there was a serendipitous image of this galaxy before the supernova. And then accidentally, the ACS team took this image thinking they were going to get all this beautiful image of clusters, and this pesky supernova showed up in the image. But again, no direct identification of a progenitor. But based on the brightness limits of the photometry for the HST images, and then sort of assuming that it has to be a supergiant progenitor for 1BC, you can put sort of limits on color magnitude or HR diagrams. And when you do that, in this case, although we have no idea what the extinction is for 03JG, you get some very loose limit of somewhere upper limit for the mass of about 40 solar masses. And you don't need HST to do this. In fact, a lot of people are realizing this is an easy thing to do, so they're doing other things like using AO from the ground and combining that with HST data. So here's some results from Avishai Galyam et al., where they took a Keck image with the AO of the supernova 2004 GT in the antennae, and went back and looked at the deep HST images that were taken of the supernova or of the galaxy, and were able to infer that the progenitor could have been a Wolf-Rayet star of roughly WNE, WCO, WC or WO class, or possibly also a massive binary. So again, we've made a little bit of progress here, but not enough to definitively say what the progenitors of type 1BC supernovae are in the local universe. And maybe this is totally irrelevant for GRBs, because even if you accept that For GRBs, you have that has to be associated with black hole formation, and you need to have a hydrogen strip star. So, you know, Wolf-Rayet star sounds like a good candidate. When Stan Woosley and Alex Hager do this recently, they find that you really need to have a Wolf-Rayet in a low metallicity environment to produce long duration GRBs. And a similar conclusion, I believe, Andy Fruchter has found for the host galaxies of GRBs, that really these are low metallicity environments. So it's possible that the remarks here are basically saying that in local universe, it's possible that Wolf-Rayet stars could be the progenitors of 1BCs, but that they would leave behind neutron star remnants at the end. This is particularly poignant in the case of this obscured superstar cluster, Westerlund 1, in our galaxy, for which Mike Muno and collaborators have recently found a pulsar. And based, again, on the argument that the stars in that cluster are coeval, they've been able to estimate that the initial mass for the progenitor of this pulsar must be greater than about 40 solar masses. And such a star in our galaxy then should go through the Wolf-Rayet phase and die as a Wolf-Rayet star. So, you know, it's quite possible that these are apples and oranges, that even if we identify directly the progenitor of 1BCs, that's great, but that may not be telling us exactly what's going on in the case of the GRBs. Anyway, I have a couple more remarks, but I guess I've run out of time. Okay. All right, but I did want to mention, even if local 1BCs have nothing to do with GRBs, there may be objects that do have a little more similarity in the local universe to the things that may be producing GRBs at higher redshift. And these are objects that are part of the sort of catch-all motley crew of spectral types for supernovae known as the type 2 narrows. There are some members of this classification which show this narrow H-alpha, narrow Balmer lines in their optical spectra that may not be supernovae at all. And in fact, one example, this got the whole sort of direct identification with HST game going, was the supernova 1997 BS, where we identified a very bright star with no color information. But again, if you put it on an HR diagram, it implies that it's a pretty massive star. And I'll just show one more example, not to beat this too much, but there's another recent example, 2002 KG, where from high-resolution ground-based data, we were able to identify the precursor of what we believe is not really a supernova, but in the case of 97 BS and 02 KG and other examples, supernova 1954J and 61V, these are probably more LBV objects, which they're very massive stars. You can see it's not very restrictive, but it's certainly a star probably more massive than 40 solar masses that's undergoing an Eta Car or an S-Dor-like outburst pre-supernova. So these are very massive stars. They're very rare in the local universe, but, you know, long ago, they were probably the top three stars that filled galaxies full of heavy elements and produced GRBs when they died. Anyway, I'll stop there.
Thank you very much. I think we are really running late. I'll take one question. Ken.
Yeah, the identification of two of the progenitors as the stars below 10 solar mass is misleading, because the Geneva track you are using, the 9 solar mass star did not evolve to the presupernova. It's very subluminous compared with the real presupernova luminosity. It's the 9, 10 solar mass stars luminosity is not so different from 12, 15 solar mass star.
Yeah,
so you have to be very careful.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, so maybe the extinction is much more important.
Well, for O3GD, we're pretty sure and for O5CS, we're pretty sure we've got the extinction pretty well defined, because in that case, we estimated the extinction based on the color curve for that supernova, for both of those supernovae. And we assume that they were very similar to, and they are very similar to 9090M, which was another low reddening type 2 plateau supernova. So we think we've got the extinction down pretty well, and the distance makes not a huge effect there if you have some uncertainty. The models is another story, and the particular models we were using were the Lejeune and Scherer models with the enhanced mass loss.
Okay, so I think we'll end this session here, and we thank again Schuyler and all of the speakers of this afternoon.